But if I remained, this is after godbrother Keshava Maharaj went back to Vrindavan, Mathura. But if I remained, Mr. Bayal wanted him out, and he even returned Abai's deposit of 210 rupees, claiming that Abai now had no justification for residing at the Bharati Bhavan. Abai noted down the latest events in his short history. 29. He has also given me a check for 210 rupees in lieu of my deposit money with him, but he has no money in the bank. The bank has returned it with remark. 30. The money which was given to him was misappropriated by him for his own purpose, and now he has given a false check with an arrangement with the bank. 31. It is plain cheating to me from the beginning to the end. 32. I must be compensated for all the money before I can leave the buildings. But he saw it as the inscrutable will of Krishna. Events and opinions were turning him against conducting a mission in Jhansi. It no longer seemed auspicious. Srila Prabhupada, I wanted to start from there. It was a nice big house. It was not given to me rightly, but I was using. So somehow or other, she got imagination that this house is very nice. She was the governor's wife. Through the collector and through government officials, she made pressure. So of course, there were many lawyer friends. They advised me, you do not give up. But I thought, who's going to litigate? I thought that I have left my home. Now I should take up litigation. No, I don't want this house. Abai remembered how the Gaudiya Math preachers had expended their energy for years in the courts. Having terminated his long entanglement with family and business, he had no taste for a legal fight. He could have fought, but he remembered what Keshava Maharaj had said about Jhansi's being out of the way. Of course, the whole thing had just sprung up here. Otherwise, Abai would never have chosen to establish his worldwide league in such an obscure place. The educated young men and women wished him well, just as they had good wishes for the Ladies' League, the Theosophy League, Theosophy Society, the Arya Samaj, and many other causes. But their good intentions were certainly short of pure surrender and devotion. Even as one disciple can offer him only part-time help. But these considerations had not been sufficient to force him out. The real thing was that he was being driven out. Srila Prabhupada, if I did not leave, nobody could drive me. That was a fact. But I thought, who is going to litigate these things? It is the governor's wife, and she is pressing through collector. The manager who is in charge, he had some cinema house, so they had to renew the license, and the collector pressed him that unless you arrange for this house, we're not going to renew your license. I thought, unnecessarily, this man will be in trouble. I will have to pay many rupees, and she is the governor's wife. He decided to leave. He told his friends to carry on the League of Devotees in his absence. They were sad to see him go, and yet even some of his friends openly praised the work of the Lady Society and were glad to see it come. They had not been able to help him financially, although they knew he had been unable to purchase the buildings on his own. His closer followers were more affected, but he assured them that their relationship would continue. He would write letters to them, Acharya Prabhakar, Radhilal Mulak, Mr. Mitra, Dr. Shastri, and he gave them instructions on what they should do, especially Acharya Prabhakar. Abhay told him he would be calling on him and expected him to continue as secretary of the League of Devotees, even if they didn't make Jhansi their main residence. Yet it was obvious that this chapter of making ambitious plans for a world movement, going from house to house and village to village, performing Sankirtan, lecturing on the Gita, distributing prasadam, this was ended. And it was not likely that he would return or that the residents of Jhansi could expect to see him again. When Abhay left the Bharati Bhavan with its six-foot-high lettering, League of Devotees, painted across the outside wall, he felt sad. It had been a natural, spontaneous success for him. The young, educated people of Jhansi had looked up to him from the start, and had it not been for the intrigue, he would never have left. But he felt he had no real choice. He had come as a family man on business and was leaving as a homeless vanaprastha, forced to take shelter of Krishna. His plans were uncertain, but his desire was strong and his health good, so he moved to Mathura, carrying with him the deity of Lord Chaitanya. This is one lesson there, is, of course, there's many lessons, but one thing is, just like Acharya Prabhakar, he was a Prabhupada's just initiated disciple, and the other devotees there were followers of him, taking him more or less seriously. But when he left, then he was gone. And not that their spirit, not that their Krishna consciousness was over, they still chant and everything, but they had such a golden opportunity to serve with directly under Prabhupada, and things didn't work out, and they didn't especially put forward any big endeavor to raise the money. They could have maybe raised the money to buy the building. They didn't do it, and none of them apparently were fired up to follow him where he went or offer service by mail or anything, maybe editing or something like that they can do by mail. But one thing you can see is that when you have an opportunity, it's not like before Prabhupada came to the United States, there was no Krishna consciousness anywhere except in Vrindavan and Mayapur and some other places, throughout India. But there was no Krishna consciousness in Boston or Buenos Aires or South Africa or Auckland there was no Krishna, or Moscow or Beijing. There was no Krishna consciousness anywhere. His Prabhupada brought it. And before him, it just wasn't here. I can attest to the fact it wasn't here. It wasn't here. And so the thing is that, and we can't take it for granted that all this great opportunity for devotional service that we have now, a temple, there's deities, we can cook, we can clean, we can go on Harinam. There's no guarantee that. I mean, there's no guarantee that it'll always be so easy for us to take part in the Sankirtan movement. It's always going on, and we'll always have access to it. But right now, it's very, very available. So anyway, that's one thing that occurred. I was thinking at the time. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 31, Verse Number 18. Jinaika Atmanam Ashesha Dehinam.
Jinaika Atmanam Ashesha Dehinam.
Kalam Pradhanam Purusham Paresham. Tejasa Dashta Guna Pravaham Atmaika Bhavena Bhajad Pramadha
Atmaika Bhavena Bhajad Pramadha
Tenaika Matmana Mashesha Dehina
Tenaika Matmana Mashesha Dehina
Kalam Padanam Purusham Parisham
Kalam Padanam Purusham
Tejasa Dvashta Guna Prabhaham
Tejasa Dvashta Guna Prabhaham
Atmaika Bhavena Bhajad Vamadha
Atmaika Bhavena Bhajad
Vamadha Tenaika Atmanam Ashesha Dehina
Tenaika Atmanam Ashesha Dehina
Kalam Pradhanam Purusham Paresham
Kalam Pradhanam Purusham Paresham
Tejasa Dvashta Guna Pravaham
Tejasa Dvashta Guna Pravaham
Atmaika Bhavena Bhajad Vamadha
Atmaika Bhavena Bhajad Vamadha
Tenaika Matma Namashesha Dehina
Tenaika Matma Namashesha Dehina
Kalam Pradhanam Purusham Paresham
Kalam Pradhanam Purusham Paresham Svateja Dvashta Guna Pravaham
Atmaika Bhavena Bhajad Vamadha
Atmaika Bhavena Bhajad Vamadha Tejasa
by his spiritual energy.
By his spiritual energy.
Dvashta.
Dvashta.
Aloof.
Aloof.
Guna pravaham.
Guna pravaham.
From material emanations.
From material emanations.
Atma.
Atma.
Self.
Self.
Ekabhavena.
Ekabhavena.
Accepting as qualitatively one.
Accepting accepted as qualitatively one.
Bhajadvam.
Bhajadvam.
Engage in devotional service.
Engage in devotional service.
Adha.
Adha.
Directly.
Directly.
Translation. Because the Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes, He is the supersoul of all individual living entities, and He exists as both the remote and immediate cause. Since He is aloof from the material emanations, He is free from their interactions and is Lord of material nature. You should therefore engage in His devotional service, thinking yourself qualitatively one with Him. Because the Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes.
Because the Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes.
He is the Supersoul.
He is the Supersoul.
Of all individual living entities.
Of all individual living entities.
And He exists.
And He exists.
As both the remote and immediate cause.
As both the remote and immediate cause.
Since He is aloof.
Since He is aloof.
From the material emanations.
From the material emanations.
He is free from their interactions.
He is free from their interactions.
And is Lord of material nature.
And is Lord of material nature.
You should therefore engage.
You should therefore engage.
In His devotional service.
In His devotional service.
Thinking yourself qualitatively one with Him.
Thinking yourself qualitatively one with Him.
Prabhupada's purport. According to Vedic calculations, there are three causes of creation. Time, the ingredient and the creator. Combined, these are called trityatmaka, the three causes. Everything in this material world is created by these three causes. All of these causes are found in the personality of Godhead, as confirmed in Brahma Samhita, Sarva Karana Karanam. Narada Muni therefore advises the Pratyekas to worship the direct cause, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated before, when the root of a tree is watered, all the parts are energized. According to the advice of Narada Muni, one should directly engage in devotional service. This will include all pious activity. Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Krishna Bhakti Koyale Sarva Karma Kitta Hoy. When one worships the Supreme Lord Krishna in devotional service, one automatically performs all other pious activity. In this verse, the words Svatejasa Dvashta Gunapravaham are very significant. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is never affected by the material qualities, although they all emanate from His spiritual energy. Those who are really conversant with this knowledge can utilize everything for the service of the Lord, because nothing in this material world is unconnected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna is the cause of all causes. Prabhupada, sometimes he would give that as a definition of God, is that he was talking to someone and he said, you had a father and mother, and you know that they had a father and mother, and you can go back in time, they had father and mother, everyone had father and mother. When you get to that person who had no father, and no father and mother, then that must be God. It's very common sense, practical analysis. I mean, what could be more obvious? Yeah, somebody doesn't have father and mother, it must be God. So Prabhupada gave so many of these, all his analogies and examples were so down to earth and so practical and so easy to understand. There's nothing hard to understand about that example, for instance. And these two examples that were given a couple of verses back about watering the root of the tree and all the branches and leaves and twigs and everything gets nourished. Like if you have a plant and the plant is all wilted away, And somebody who knows plants thinks, I think it's still alive, it just needs water. And you pour the water on the root of the plant, and like within a few hours of the next day, it's standing up straight again, and the leaves are shining again. And it wasn't dead, but it needed water to be put. It would have been dead soon, but it needed water to be put on the root. And then it came back. And so that's one example. And the other example is feeding the stomach and all the parts of the body are nourished automatically. And if the hand thinks, oh, I don't want to feed the stomach, I want to enjoy the food myself, then you smush it up and all you have is a mess in your hand. It's better to have a mess in your stomach and have the energy circulated throughout the body. So those two examples are, I had never made it, I mean, I'm sure somebody's made an exhaustive study of Prabhupada's purports and lectures and everything, but I would venture to say that those are two of his most often used examples for illustrating how we have to serve Krishna as the root of the material existence, and we have to serve the soul within the body. There's a picture in the old Bhagavad Gita. I don't know. But it's a picture of a man. Is it a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where the man has a golden cage with a bird inside, and he polishes the cage, but he doesn't feed the bird in the cage, and the bird dies. So it's a and sometimes you go outside, you see these men and women. Sometimes they're like, the young ones are running around, they're like 18, 20, 30 years old, and they look good, and they're strong and healthy, and they're beautiful bodies, beautiful face. And you see these men and women who are like 50, 60, 70 years old out there running, and they have their like speedo suit, form-fitting suits on. And they're also thinking, I guarantee you, they're also thinking, look at me. Okay, you know, a guy is 70 years old and he's running along, but he's thinking, oh, look at me. I'm a little old, but I still got it. And actually, I still look good, too. That's what he, so everyone, the whole society, is like, everything is dressing up the body. Like downtown Boston, people are really into fashion. There's all these stores over on Newbury Street, and people carry around these bags with the name of the store on it in big letters. It's a fancy brand, and they paid like $100 for a t-shirt or something, and they think, oh, look at me, I got this fancy brand t-shirt. You know, people know I'm fashionable, and they get their hair done for $400. And look at everything is for the cage. The body is a cage. The soul is encaged in the material body. The body is nothing but a lump of ignorance. The senses are networks of paths leading to death. And everywhere people are going, of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and difficult to control. And you go out, everybody's at these restaurants eating and drinking. And we know, I know from the tongue is definitely the most voracious and difficult to control the senses. And that's why Krishna has given us this nice prasadam, spiritual food, just to conquer the tongue. And we take the prasadam to our full satisfaction and love, call upon the help of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and satisfy the Lordship Sri Radha Krishna. And Prabhupada preached about the benefits and the philosophy of preparing bhoga and offering it to Krishna, making it really nice, and taking the remnants is very super important basic function of Krishna consciousness. It's one of the most, because you have to eat every day. Everybody has to eat something every day. So, and Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita, those who prepare food only for their personal sense enjoyment, they verily eat only sin. So if you're going to eat something and you don't want to eat sin, then you have to eat Krishna, and you have to eat Krishna prasadam. And not only are you not eating sin, not only are you not guilty for killing other living entities, because in order to eat you have to kill. The living entity with no legs is food for the living entity with four legs, and the living entity with four legs is food for the living entity with two legs. And the ultimate conclusion is jiva, jivasya jivanam. If you're going to live, you have to kill somebody else. And that's why the material world is like a really rough place. It's like nobody can live here unless they eat somebody else. And you're not like eating something else, you're eating somebody. Every living entity has to eat somebody else. So that's the nature of the world we live in is such so cruel. You can only maintain your life by eating somebody else. That's rough. So in Krishna consciousness, whatever we eat, the living entity whose body is used and is used in the preparation of the bhoga that's offered to Krishna, that living entity makes spiritual advancement by being offered to Krishna. And those of us, the devotees who eat honor the remnants of the food, the prasadam, the Lord's mercy, we not only don't get karma, but we make spiritual advancement. We eat our way back to Krishna. As I heard one well-known lecture where Prabhupada was talking about, there's some fads about what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat. And I don't know the exact circumstances, but there was some kind of thing, well, we shouldn't eat this, we should eat that. And Prabhupada, it is like, don't use ghee or sugar or something. And Prabhupada said, he was glorifying prasadam. And at the end he said, then let us die eating prasadam. And then all the devotees, of course everybody was young, everybody's like 18, 20 years old, they're not thinking of, diabetes or, anything, but Prabhupada wasn't considering that. He said, let us die eating prasadam. And the disciples were like, jai, Prabhupada. So, anyways, it's a, and there's another example from Prabhupada's life where some devotees were, some of the women were like, not giving him any ghee. It was like really kind of bland prasadam for a while, and Prabhupada was like taking it for a few days or a little while, and then he said. He said, let the starvation committee go to hell. I said, give me some prasadam. But there's another story where it's a little different, where they made somebody cook something that had so much ghee that they asked how Prabhupada liked it after he ate it, and he said, I don't know, it slipped down my throat so fast I couldn't taste it. Anyways, these aren't like absolute examples, but these are all instructive stories. So anyway, that, I got on that from feeding the stomach, supplying the food to the stomach and the whole body. And so the prasadam is crucial, crucial to the ISKCON movement. The Prabhupada's secret weapon. It's our secret weapon. You go out and chant and dance on the street, and some people will get angry. Some people always get angry. You go out and distribute books, and some people won't like that. There's always some people. But you give somebody something delicious to eat, and people love it. People love it. And they're getting their spiritual medicine in that way. So he said, this is our secret weapon. He called the globjimans. You don't get globjimans too much anymore, but sometimes you get these big, fat, juicy globjimans, and which he in the 26 Akin Avenue, he kept them in a jar by the door, and devotees, they were supposed to be, eat simply all week and then have a Sunday feast, but there was always globjimans. From what I heard, there's always globjimans available right there, and you just take a big globjiman. There's nothing more sense gratification than a big juicy sweet globjiman. And you call the globjimans are called
ISKCON bullets.
ISKCON bullets. That's right. And like he called the books. Devotees would go out to distribute books. And he referred to the books as like bombs that are... He often used military analogies. He was fighting a war against Maya, and the devotees are the soldiers, and the book distributors are on the front lines. And he often used military analogies like that. And devotees often use military analogies in relationship to Prabhupada, that he's the general who's so strong that he's able to control. Because all the young men, you have people like Tamal Krishna Maharaj and all these devotees back then, Brahmananda and so many, Ridhananda Maharaj and Kirtananda and all these big devotees. They're powerful personalities. They're not like namby-pamby, fluffy, retiring little boys and girls. They were tough and very intelligent, like super intelligent and powerful, powerful personalities. And Prabhupada was so strong that he kept thousands of disciples like that, of various degrees of strength. It's not like you have to be a big type A personality to be a devotee. Every devotee is valuable, no matter tendencies, your personal personality traits, your tendencies. But the fact of the matter is that Prabhupada had so many personalities, very powerful. But Prabhupada was able to keep them all under control because he was much more powerful. He was more powerful than all of his disciples put together. And that's saying something, because his strength, he was an empowered representative of Krishna. I just heard Prabhupada talking on a lecture the other day, saying how Lord Jesus Christ is a Shaktivesha avatar, and Hazrat Muhammad was a Shaktivesha avatar. They must have been, otherwise how could they have preached about love of God and spread their transcendent, their Krishna conscious message all over the world. So Prabhupada is also understood by the ISKCON followers at least as being a Shaktivesha avatar. He's empowered by Lord Chaitanya to do things that nobody else could do. Nobody else could do. And why could Prabhupada do it? Only because he's an empowered person. What's the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita? Can't spread Krishna consciousness unless he's empowered. So So unless you're empowered by Krishna, you can't do it. You just can't do it. And there are many empowered devotees in our present time who are spreading Krishna consciousness really strongly all over the world. And they're also empowered. They're not Prabhupada, but they're also empowered as followers, as surrendered servants of Prabhupada. They're empowered to distribute Krishna consciousness to thousands and thousands and millions of people all over the world. I just wanted to mention one thing about time. Time, it's just mentioned as one of the words in the verses in the column, is time. And the interesting thing about the time, well, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, time I am, kalosmi. The Krishna is time. And when you talk to people, just any random person, just anybody, you'll find that everybody has like an idea of time, and that everybody is bewildered by time. And people talk about time all the time. And they talk about, oh, 50 years ago I did this, and it seemed like I could remember it like this, and yesterday it seems like so far I don't remember what I did yesterday. So many unusual perceptions people have about time. And there's a good reason for that. It's because time is directly a manifestation of Krishna. And you can, of course, in the very like down to earth way. Now it's 1 o'clock. Now it's 2 o'clock. Now it's 2015. Now it's 2020. In the very practical day to day way, everybody has some concept of what time is. But actually, time is this mysterious, mysterious force that is all pervasive and that people perceive in many strange and wonderful ways. Just wanted to mention that. Yes.
You mentioned people not seeing the signs of aging. You know, but they're actually like they're really, really. I mean, they're just hitting us, changing the mind's ability. To deflect them. And you were talking about an older person out there jogging, and I had that experience running. I'm out there jogging, thinking, you know, I'm really, really super healthy. And then I see overweight people walking past me. So I get a sign, I get a glimpse, wait a minute, I'm getting older, but then my mind tells me, yeah, but you excel at other types of exercise. Other types of exercise, you can still do it just as good, or even probably better than when you're 19 years old. Yeah. Well, that's what the mind tells you.
Well, one thing is that the conditioned soul, first of all, our whole existence in the material world is a lie. It's based on a lie. We come to the material world in order to be the enjoyer, to be the Lord. So our whole existence here is a lie. And when you come to as a conditioned soul, we constantly lie. We lie, and one of the main person we lie to all the time is ourself. We lie to ourselves all the time. Like people see, you look in the mirror and you see, I'm getting old. But immediately the rationalizations kick in and the lies kick in. And say, yeah, you look old, but actually not that bad. Actually, you're still pretty good looking.
I just found that book about lying down. So I was just thinking about it because many times, like when something happens to him, they didn't deserve it.
And what?
Like, they didn't deserve it. Like,
sometimes,
and when we go to our friends, it's considered that the friends will say, hey, you didn't deserve it, you're so good. But now I think that it's just like my baby. But I'm guessing what they deserve. It's like
Yeah.
So
nobody gets anything they don't deserve.
Yeah, because this is like not real friendship or not like really love. Like sometimes it can be good because if both the devotees and understand that actually I deserve everything. But if you just tell lie to each other.
Yeah. I mean, we're so expert at, the conditioned soul is so expert at lying. We lie like, and we don't, we're so good at it that a lot of the time we don't even know we're doing it. And it's as though it's like when you come into the, when you're in the presence of a great devotee that you really, really respect and admire, especially if it's your spiritual master, you come into his presence, and it's like, well, you know, there's no room for lying anymore. You can't, the story, I mean, there's so many stories of incidents people tell about relationships they've had with Prabhupada or with their spiritual master where something went wrong and they tried to make an excuse. Which ordinary, you know, or they tried to lie, tried to hide something, cover, and it was exposed. And spiritual master exposed it immediately, and he chastised them for it. But we're so used to lying. But the really one of the real benefits of being in the presence of your spiritual master is that that all of a sudden you're hit with a realization that like I can't lie to him, and so anyway.
So talking about really quick, she was bringing a couple of things together here. She was talking about, you were all talking about lying, and we're talking about time and the truth.
Yes.
And Sahari Sahari talks about Prabhupada, the satyam priyam. You know, sometimes there's a time for truth and there's a time for, you know, flattery or dearness and like that. And Prabhupada, you know, was expert at knowing when to do which one. And even with disciples, sometimes, you know, it would be major truth, cutting truth, and then sometimes he would know not to so much, to be gentle. And he knew exactly when to do it. He knew how, if they could handle the truth.
Yes.
So that's something I think we need to work on.
I see that as a strength of this kind of nowadays. Like in the beginning, Prabhupada was the only... old and physically old and very extremely mature and transcendentally spiritually mature, to say the least, and he could deal in a very sensitive way with each and every different situation. Like, and so now there are many, many devotees who are older devotees and experienced and advanced and sensitive to people's needs, and I think it's a real strength of the movement now is that there are so many devotees who aren't kids anymore. And when everybody's 18 or 20 years old, or 25, maybe 30 years old, and somebody doesn't sweep the floor right or is like a minute late on the altar. And like the temple commander or the temple president, like, just blasts them, like, you are late! It's a big offense. But now, that's not good. There has to be a lot more sensitivity to individual devotees, like a parent. A parent has a number of children. I didn't know the mother and the father. They know this child. If I yell at him, he'll freak out and he'll cry and he won't come out of his room for 5 hours. But this child, I can chastise him. And I mean, a parent knows things like that. But and so a spiritual master knows. But not only spiritual master, but many older. Experience about it.
It's interesting how the Supreme Lord teaches us absolute truths through practical examples.
Yeah.
Like it's baffling. Like if there's somebody new who walks into the temple and we take him to a garden where there's a plant which is starving for 5 days and you just tell him that this plant is starving and you have to water, naturally he goes and waters the root.
Yeah.
He naturally waters the root. And Krishna, again and again, he says, he's the root, he's the root, he's the root. But still, we keep him away from our life. And we still try to water the plant of our life in our own way of watering our own twigs and our own leaves.
Yeah.
And keeping him away. And we walk past so many trees in our life. I mean, you just walk past this street and you see so many trees. And every tree is just speaking to you the same truth. That for us to survive, the root is watered. Yeah. And but we still miss the point. So it's interesting how you started off with that point, and it's so practical, like Krishna's. It's not that the example is given in the Bhagavatam, so we go backwards. That this in understanding the truth, but it's actually the truth, and to explain that, Krishna gets this practical thing around us. So it's interesting.
It's
very interesting. Yeah.
The shastras and the spiritual master, they're nothing if not practical. The philosophy is the ultimate mystery, it's the ultimate miraculous thing, the gopis and Krishna and Vrindavan. But when you bring it down to the basic, the most fundamental level of preaching to the fallen souls, it becomes very, very immediate and practical. Like, water the roots, take prasadam, you know, go out on Harinam, distribute the holy name, everything is Krishna is present in his name. Everything is really practical and really easy to do. There's nothing hard about any of it. Okay, I gotta stop. I'm supposed to cook. Hare Krishna.